Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Brian Lynn. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, countries throughout Asia are looking for less costly ways to upgrade their militaries, defense companies said at the Singapore Air Show last week. The air show brings together government, military, and high-level business officials every 2 years. Before the show, Indonesia said it would order 42 French fighter jets in an $8.1 billion deal. That makes the island nation the biggest French arms user in the area. Southeast Asia countries, especially, will most likely deal with important needs in the next year, said Colin Koh. He is a researcher at Singapore's Institute of Defense and Strategic Studies. A good number of countries in the region are facing rising debt. That means the spending will very likely be very conservative, Koh said. He added that many countries were shopping for better or upgraded helicopters. The Philippines announced in January it was buying 32 S-70i Black Hawk helicopters from a company owned by Sikorsky Aircraft. Sikorsky is owned by the Lockheed Martin Corporation. Tim Cahill is Lockheed Martin's Senior Vice President for Global Business. At the air show, he said there was a growing need for helicopters in the area. The Philippines order was a very good one for us. The partnership with the armed forces is really positive for us, and in fact, they are ordering more, he said. Aircraft called Maritime Patrol Aircraft, or MPA, remain a major need for guarding the waters between some Asian nations, said Boaz Levi. He is chief executive officer of Israel Aerospace Industries. The company has an MPA partnership with aircraft manufacturer Embraer. There are a lot of customers interested. I can't say what stage or what country, Levi said. We have a lot of activities, especially with the airborne radar. There is big demand for such an aircraft and such capabilities. MPAs are often costly, however. The last major MPA deal was the sale of 6 Boeing P-8A Poseidon aircraft to South Korea in 2018 for nearly $2 billion. Another 4 Poseidon aircraft went to New Zealand for about $1.6 billion. Unmanned aircraft, or drones, offer a less costly way to patrol the seas for possible threats. Australia is working with Boeing to produce so-called loyal wingman drones. These drones would fly alongside piloted fighter aircraft, a representative said at the air show. Both Cahill and Koh said a rise in production of ballistic missiles and long-range rockets in the area has increased interest in improved air defense systems. But Koh warned that such upgrades were costly and not always seen as urgent. There will be interest in long-range air defense going forward in terms of upgrading, he said. But given the funding environment, governments will be satisfied with their short-range and medium-range air defense systems.
February marks the halfway point of winter in the northern part of the world. With spring arriving soon, many people are dreaming of working in their gardens on warm, sunny days. Some gardeners like to start the growing season early. They can do this by growing plants from seed inside their home. It is important to know when to start growing your seeds indoors. The answer depends on where you live. Gardeners use the average last frost date in their area to help them know when to begin growing seeds. Frost is a thin layer of ice that forms on the ground when the air is cold. Some places have special groups that can provide such information. But there are also good online calculators that can tell you about frost dates, too. The small packets that seeds come in usually advise you to start seeds a given number of weeks before the last frost. The recommendation will differ depending on the seed type. After finding your start date, it is important to respect it. If you start too soon, plants likely will grow weak and struggle to do well. If you start too late, your harvest will be delayed. While you are waiting, find and prepare your growing containers. You can use things like recycled yogurt or egg containers. Each container should have a hole in the bottom for water to flow through. If you still have containers you used last year, make sure to disinfect them with a strong cleaning solution. Fill each container with a clean, moist, soilless seed starting mix. Place 1 to 4 seeds in each cell, depending on the seed kind and size. Water the seeds as needed to keep the mix from drying out. Cover the seed containers tightly. Put them in a warm place out of direct sunlight. Heating mats placed under the trays will help the seeds develop more quickly. Be on the lookout for damping off, a fungal disease that happens in cool, wet, dark areas. If you see a white layer on the soil's surface, remove it carefully and let the soil dry completely before watering again. One way to help avoid damping off is to direct the wind of a small fan toward the soil. The wind from the fan can help train young seedlings to withstand wind outside. The seedlings will become stronger as a result. When seedlings first appear, remove the covering and put containers by a sunny window. You can also put them under special lighting devices called grow lamps for 14 hours a day. Costly lamps are not necessary. Ordinary lights will work. Keep the light source no more than 5 to 10 centimeters above the plants, changing its height as the seedlings grow. If several seedlings sprout in each container, cut the weakest at the soil line using small scissors. The aim is to keep only one strong-looking plant per container section. If you let more than one seedling remain, the roots may become mixed together. The young plants might not survive. A week before the last frost date, begin to harden off plants by placing them outside for longer periods of time each day. Place them in a shady area protected from wind. Leave them there for 1 hour and then bring them back inside. Repeat the next day, but leave them out for 2 hours. Continue adding 1 hour of outdoor time each day for 1 week. By the end of the week, your plants will be prepared to survive and grow in your garden outside.
Researchers say a new electrical device placed in 3 paralyzed patients has helped them walk again. The lower bodies of the 3 patients were left paralyzed after they suffered spinal cord injuries. But a device implanted in the spinal cord was able to send electrical signals to the muscles to permit them to stand, walk, and exercise. The device is designed to copy an action of the brain, in which it sends signals to the spinal cord that result in muscle movement. When the spinal cord receives the brain signals, it stimulates a collection of nerve cells that can activate different muscles. In patients with serious spinal cord injuries, messages from the brain have difficulty reaching the nerves. But scientists have discovered that neurons, which receive and send signals for muscle movements, often still work in injured patients. Past research into spinal cord injuries has centered on the use of electrical devices to stimulate neurons, the publication Nature reports. Grégoire Courtin and Jocelyn Bloch of the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne led the latest experiments. The results were published in a study in Nature Medicine. The experiments involved 3 men who had been injured in motorbike accidents. The patients' ages were 29, 32, and 41 years old. Their injuries were to an area called the thoracic spine, which is below the neck and above the lowest part of the back. The researchers reported that all 3 patients who got the spinal cord implants were able to take their first steps within an hour after receiving them. Over the next 6 months, the patients regained the ability to take part in more advanced walking activities, the study found. They were also able to ride bicycles and swim in community settings. The individuals can control the nerve stimulation devices themselves by using a personal electronic device, the researchers said. Michele Roccati from Italy is one of the patients. He told reporters that the first step he took while using the device was a very emotional experience. Roccati added that he can now stand for several hours and walk nearly a kilometer. Other researchers have attempted to help paralyzed patients walk by stimulating nerves through the back of the spine. But the Federal Institute of Technology's Courtin told Reuters that his team redesigned the devices so signals would enter the spine from the sides. This method permits more direct targeting and activation of spinal cord areas, he said. The team then developed artificial intelligence systems linked to the device. the AI controls electrodes on the device to send signals to stimulate individual nerves that control muscles needed for walking and other activities. When the device was implanted, patients could immediately activate their legs and step, said researcher Jocelyn Block. However, because the patient's muscles were weak from not being used, they needed help with supporting their weight, the researchers said. It also took some time for them to learn to work with the technology. Even though the patients have the ability to perform several kinds of activities, the team said they did not regain completely natural movements. Still, Block said, the more they train, the more they start lifting their muscles, the more fluid it becomes. Rocati said he activates the implant daily at home and continues to get stronger. I'm Brian Lynn.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Bob Doty with Steve Ember. We continue the story of the administration of Herbert Hoover, and we talk about the election of 1932.
President Herbert Hoover worked hard to rescue the American economy following the crash of the stock market. It happened in October of 1929. Within a month, Hoover called the nation's business leaders to the White House. "Don't lower wages," the president told them. Hoover called on the bankers at the Federal Reserve to make it easier for businesses to borrow money. He tried to provide funds to help farmers get fair prices for their crops. He pushed Congress to lower personal taxes. And above all, the president urged Americans not to lose hope in their economy or in themselves.
But the economy was in ruins, falling faster with each passing day of the crisis that grew into the Great Depression. The value of stocks had collapsed. Millions of workers lost their jobs. The level of industrial production in the country was less than half of what it had been before the stock market crash. Hoover's efforts were not enough to stop the growing crisis. In ever greater numbers, people called on the president to increase federal spending and provide jobs for people out of work. But the president was a conservative Republican. He did not think it was the responsibility of the federal government to provide relief for poor Americans. And he thought it was wrong to increase spending above the amount of money that the government received in taxes.
The situation seemed out of control. The nation's government and business leaders appeared to have no idea how to save the dollar and put people back to work. Hoover was willing to take steps like spending government money to help farmers buy seeds and fertilizer, but he was not willing to give wheat to unemployed workers who were hungry. He created an emergency committee to study the unemployment problem, but he would not launch government programs to create jobs. Hoover called on Americans to help their friends in need. but he resisted calls to spend federal funds for major relief programs to help the millions of Americans facing disaster.
Leaders of the Democratic Party made the most of the situation. They accused the president of not caring about the common man. They said Hoover was willing to spend money to feed starving cattle for businessmen, but not willing to feed poor children. Hoover tried to show the nation that he was dealing with the crisis. He worked with Congress to try to save the banks and to keep the dollar tied to the value of gold. He tried hard to balance the federal budget, and he told Americans that it was not the responsibility of the national government to solve all their problems.
Late in 1931, President Hoover appointed a new committee on unemployment. He named Walter Gifford to head this committee. Gifford was chief of a big company, American Telephone and Telegraph. But Gifford did Hoover more harm than good. When he appeared before Congress, Gifford was unable to defend Hoover's position that relief was the responsibility of local governments and private giving. He admitted that he did not know how many people were out of work. He did not know how many of them needed help, or how much help they needed, or how much money local governments could raise.
The situation grew worse. Some Americans began to completely lose faith in their government. They looked to groups with extreme political ideas to provide answers. Some Americans joined the Communist Party. Others helped elect state leaders with extreme political ideas. And in growing numbers, people began to turn to hatred and violence. However, most Americans remained loyal to traditional values, even as conditions grew steadily worse. They looked ahead to 1932, when they would have a chance to vote for a new president.
Leaders of the Democratic Party felt they had an excellent chance to capture the White House in the election, and their hopes increased when the Republicans renominated President Hoover and Vice President Charles Curtis in the summer of 1932. For this reason, competition was fierce for the Democratic presidential nomination. The top candidate was Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the governor of New York State. Roosevelt had been re-elected to that office by a large majority just 2 years earlier. He came from a rich and famous family, but he was seen as a friend of the common man. Roosevelt was conservative in his economic thinking, but he was a progressive in his opinion that government should be active in helping people. Roosevelt had suffered from polio and could not walk. He used a wheelchair, although it was rarely shown in news pictures.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt's two main opponents were Al Smith and John Garner. Smith had been the governor of New York before Roosevelt. Garner, a Texan, was the Speaker of the House of Representatives. Together, they hoped to block Roosevelt's nomination, and they succeeded the first three times that delegates voted at the Democratic nominating convention in Chicago. Roosevelt's chief political advisor, James Farley, worked hard to find Roosevelt the votes he needed at the convention. Finally, Farley found a solution. He made a deal with supporters of John Garner. Roosevelt would make Garner the vice presidential nominee if Garner's forces voted to make Roosevelt the presidential nominee. Garner agreed. And on the next vote, the Democratic delegates nominated Franklin Roosevelt to be their presidential candidate. Al Smith was so angry about the deal that he left Chicago without congratulating Roosevelt. Roosevelt wanted to show the nation that he was the kind of man to take action, that he had more imagination than Hoover. So he broke tradition and flew to Chicago. It was the first time a candidate had ever appeared at a convention to accept a nomination. And Roosevelt told the cheering crowd that together they would defeat Hoover.
The main issue in the campaign of 1932 was the economy. President Hoover defended his policies. Roosevelt and the Democrats attacked the administration for not taking enough action. Roosevelt knew that most Americans were unhappy with the Hoover administration. So his plan during the campaign was to let Hoover defeat himself. He avoided saying anything that might make groups of voters think he was too extreme. But Roosevelt did make clear that he would move the federal government into action to help people suffering from the economic crisis. He said he was for a balanced federal budget, but he also said the government must be willing to spend extra money to prevent people from starving.
Americans liked what they heard from Franklin Roosevelt. He seemed strong. He enjoyed life. And Roosevelt seemed willing to try new ideas, to experiment with government. Hoover attacked Roosevelt bitterly during the campaign. He warned that Roosevelt and the Democrats would destroy the American system. But Americans were tired of Hoover. They thought he was too serious, too afraid of change, too friendly with business leaders instead of the working man. Most of all, they blamed Hoover for the hard times of the Depression. On Election Day, Americans voted in huge numbers for Franklin Roosevelt and the Democrats. Roosevelt won 42 of the 48 states at that time. The Democrats also gained a large majority in both houses of Congress.
The election ended 12 years of Republican rule in the White House. It also marked the passing of a long conservative period in American political life. Franklin Delano Roosevelt would become one of the strongest and most progressive presidents in the nation's history. He would serve longer than any other president, changing the face of America's political and economic systems.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.